T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Welcome back into the John Chukwa Show. Normally from the Keys Studios, but coming to you tonight from, as the great Howard Finkel would say, from parts unknown. Hanging out with you for another hour. Willie P is going to come up at the top of the hour. It's a brave new world out there as we adjust to this new way of life. So you can reach us at 404-741-0929. That's the phone line. That is also the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show. Don't forget your radio.com app. If you download that, then you can catch us anywhere on the go at any time. Got that cool new feature about you can listen back to anything over the past 24 hours in real time. So get that downloaded on any of your devices. Check us out on social media at 929TheGame, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. The best way to be a part of our show is always follow us on our social media pages. I'm at JMCH316, at JMCH316 on Twitter. All your water cooler talking points 3 to 6 months in advance of anybody else that is out there. He is producing the show back at the ranch at JarvisD90, at JarvisD90. Little David Ruffin to get the Brown Liquor Music Hour started. Don't forget, we will always keep it live with some good music here as well. But it's that time of the night. We head to the final hour. Let's get to our NFL squib kick.
Taking a look at the NFL with the squib kick with John Chukwa. Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Well, no slowing down the NFL from making plenty of moves. So interesting moves, not just Tom Brady leaving the Patriots, but also another one of their stalwarts as well, as Steven Gostkowski was released on Monday. That ends his 14-year run with the Patriots. And think about how fortunate the Patriots have been between Adam Vinatieri and between Steven Gostkowski, how they haven't had to do any sort of worrying at that position whatsoever. Think about how many years they got out of those two guys and how solidified that position has been for them. Listen, I know a lot of people don't value kickers and all that good kind of stuff. Man, that is valuable. To have two guys like that that have given you that much. You know, Vinatieri, I think, is a Hall of Famer. I think he's going to get into the Hall of Fame. Gostkowski, not like that, but certainly one of the great kickers that we've seen over the last, you know, decade and a half. He is the franchise's all-time leading scorer with 1,775 points, and I'll bet a lot of people didn't realize that. Now, he was scheduled to make $4.8 million on the cap, and that's what happens even when you get to a kicker that's been around for a long time. He's going to start to eat up some cap, so they will get some cap relief for him. Last year was kind of a lost year. Hip surgery shortened his 2019. He only had 4 games out there. So it makes sense after injury prone, a big cap number, they can save some money. And it sounds good to just say, well, you know, just release the kicker. Hey, look what this team here in Atlanta went through last year. Look what this team went through, 3 kickers just to try to find something that was stabilized. You know, put all their eggs in one basket and end up kind of paying for it in the end. So listen, never be assured that you have a guaranteed thing, even at kicker. So it'll be a new era, new era. Only 2 kickers, what, since the late 90s, early 2000s? So think about that. They've gotten, 20-some-odd years out of 2 kickers, between Vinatieri and Gostkowski, that's pretty remarkable. That's one of those things where you go in every year, and as a franchise, hey, listen, there's nothing wrong with feeling confident about having a guy like that you feel like can put it through the uprights. Also, too, so story coming out through Pro Football Talk, actually Andrew Marchand of the New York Post reporting that Peyton Manning was given another offer to host Monday Night Football. Has there been any group like ESPN's just burning desire to get Peyton Manning to do Monday Night Football? I've never seen anything quite like it, but reports are that he declined another opportunity to be the lead analyst. Now, of course, the rumor and innuendo with the scuttlebutt was that they wanted Tony Romo, obviously, and CBS came in with that mega offer. What was it, $14 million a year or something like that that Tony Romo got? He got a boatload of cash to be it, and probably felt comfortable and said, you know, let's stay here with the guys that gave me my shot and let me be a part of it rather than go into a venture. And let's face it, you know, Monday Night Football has been kind of a dark hole a little bit. I mean, John Gruden, certainly a guy that that kind of, you know, brought some prominence back, but you know, last couple of years the Jason Witten experiment didn't go well. Booger, I like. I mean, I don't have really a problem with Booger, but trying to find that next right guy, you know, trying to find that next John Madden or what have you, for all of it. It says ESPN did not put together a specific final financial package, I should say, for Manning because it never really got to that point. Manning, according to Marchand, simply isn't ready to commit to the weekly grind of travel, preparation, and execution. And it may not sound like a lot, but it is. It's a lot for guys to have to go through, and all, you know, it's not just show up on Monday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You're there the day before. You're talking with the coaches. You're talking with the team. Sometimes those guys go out to practices. They fly out to practices during the week and watch what's going on. And also, too, they say that part of it may have also been the fact that ESPN was not able to. Remember, they were going to try to make that trade for Al Michaels. Not like sign him, but actually make a trade for Al Michaels. They say that could have been a factor as well, without any sort of guarantee as to who was going to be the play-by-play guy when all is said and done. So they say that ESPN probably is not going to give up, that they will just continue to fight and fight and fight. And I saw something about ESPN is going to run, or they did run an a Peyton Manning Day or something like that. I forget, celebrating his birthday or something like that they were going to run a whole bunch of stuff featuring him out there. So it says, if when Monday Night Football slides from ESPN back to sister company ABC in 2022, and that's when Al Michaels becomes a free agent, that could be when Peyton Manning decides to come enter in. I don't know. I mean, considering how much offers he's had and how much money he could probably make, it just feels like, I don't know, maybe that's just a pairing that's never going to happen. And I can understand. I mean, listen, you can't fault the guy for not wanting to go through that grind and go through that travel and stuff like that. And it's just probably not for him. You know, it's, listen, could Peyton Manning use the money? Everybody could use lots of extra money, right? Now, there's nobody that wants to turn down a whole pile of money. But at the same time, it's not like Peyton Manning was underpaid in his time in the NFL. It's not like he didn't make whole tons of cash and jack while he was in the league. So for now, he will not be part of the broadcast. So we mentioned about the Falcons, who are going to be having their new uniforms come up, what, 2 to 3 weeks, something like that, that they will unveil their new uniforms, assuming that all stays on track, which I don't know why it wouldn't. But one team that did release its new team colors and logos, that would be the Los Angeles Rams. Now, they're going away from the navy blue, light gold, and white, which was what they adopted when they got to, you know, as part of being in St. Louis in 2000. Shouldn't say that's when they moved there, but that was their look in 2000. Their new colors are going to be kind of a spinoff to the throwback with the royal blue and gold. Now, they call it the Rams Royal, but it is kind of funny because when you look at the logo and the colors, it does have a lot of similarities to what the Chargers just unveiled, okay? But I will say this, and the Rams logo, you know, it is what it is. I mean, it's a Rams head and yellow horns with the white head or anything like that. You know, it looks kind of goofy a little bit. It's not the best looking thing in the world. But it does have a lot of similarities to the Chargers. The one thing that I like is I hope they go back to those throwback kind of uniforms. Like the Rams look good in that, you know, that kind of, you know, I don't know what you call it, like a royal blue. Not so much like that navy blue, but that royal blue, the yellow. I love the old school Rams. Man, nothing like Eric Dickerson in that old school Rams uniform, man. Just Eric Dickerson with that face mask and the big mouth guard and the goggles, man. That's where you gotta love the Rams. Give me that Rams look all day long. Don't give me the, you know, Kurt Warner Rams and they got kind of the bluish and the gold and, you know, kind of all that. Give me old school Rams, just like Pitt. You know, some teams should just stay with their old school uniforms. Pitt is one of those schools in college. The Rams are like that as well. In the NFL. Also, too, the XFL had some of their players get signed. Remember, we talked about that. Today was the day that the XFL was going to release all those players. They obviously canceled the rest of their season. And I think it was only four games left plus their playoffs that they had with all of it. But some of the quarterbacks, a couple of guys, several guys, at least a handful of guys that got signed. And listen, while, yes, you say on one hand that takes away from, you know, the quality of play that the XFL has, it's a good thing for the XFL if NFL teams want to sign their players. And I'm not sure that the XFL is necessarily trying to be a farm system or minor league system for the NFL, but that's better, at least having that relationship, than what we saw last time with the XFL, you know, where it's kind of a joke and all those things. So some of these guys getting a chance to be signed. Remember Jordan Te'amu, the former Ole Miss quarterback? Well, he signed with the Kansas City Chiefs on Monday. You know, one of the guys that got signed out there. So, you know, listen, good for these guys for getting a chance to get into the league. And even though, obviously, the league didn't get a chance to finish and it didn't get a chance to have a full season out of it, like I said, if you've got guys that played well enough that NFL teams are at least willing to take a look at some of these guys, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. P.J. Walker, he's another quarterback that was signed. He signed with the Carolina Panthers. I think he played for, did he not play for Matt Rhule, I think, at one time as well. So, listen, good for some of these guys for finding some additional work. And if nothing else, you know, maybe try to resurrect some careers from guys. And listen, without a full season, I still think that there was a lot of success for the XFL. I think they got off to a good first-year start. And what will be interesting to see is, you know, how much interest gets back into the XFL. Should be no reason to think that they won't come back, and they did a good thing by playing all of the players and everybody that's involved in all of it. So, you know, it was a good thing for them to do all that and kind of make good for those guys, because at least that leaves a good taste in the mind of a lot of players who say, okay, if you're asking about, well, should I come back? Do I want to come back and do this again? Okay, the fact that Vince McMahon, you know, took care of everybody, that says a lot. You know, because it was no fault of their own, obviously, about what had happened and obviously the changes that happened in the world. But the fact that Vince paid these guys out, that's a good sign. And that's one of those things that will get guys to want to come back and play. And truthfully, maybe create some more interest from some guys that maybe some guys look at this now and say, instead of let me try to go cling to an NFL job that I can't get and stay on a practice squad, maybe it's better to go to the XFL or make a name for myself and then have teams come after me. You know, that's one of the advantages. People talk about, is it better to be a free agent and not get drafted or get drafted in the sixth or seventh round? Yeah, there's definitely some money differences about being drafted, no question about that there are some advantages to that. But one of the nice advantages about if you are not drafted is the fact that as teams come calling for you as an undrafted free agent, now you get to pick your situation. Now, instead of, you know, being locked into whatever team drafts you, now as an, you know, undrafted free agent, you get a chance to pick what team that you want to go play for. So good for the XFL. I think there was a lot of good things that came out of all of that. So we will see what happens in year two. All right, when we get back, it looks like it's going to be 2016 all over again for the Atlanta Falcons. We'll talk about that next. John Shuckery here, hanging out with you on a Monday night, live with you, Sports Radio, 910 The Game, and on the radio.com app. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Welcome back into the John Shuckery Show. No, not live in the Kia Studios. Coming to you from parts unknown. It's a new reality of our world. Don't forget the radio.com app. Always catch us on the go that way. Download it so you can catch us on any device, anywhere. You're not spending as much time in the car, but want to listen to the station. No better way than the radio.com app. Your smartphone, your smart speakers, your boombox, turntable, Walkman, 8-track player, whatever you got out there. Just download it to catch us on the go. Follow us on social media. I'm at JMCH316, at JMCH316. He's at Jarvis D90, back at the ranch, producing the show. Willie P will be coming up at the top of the hour. So let's go back in time just a little bit, Falcons fans. Remember when the Tack McKinley draft happened and all the excitement surrounding it? And, of course, you add in Isaiah Oliver and some of the other draft picks and stuff that the Falcons have picked up over the last, you know, couple of years. And the mantra started to become after the Super Bowl that, well, you see, here comes the transformation of going from a offensive team to a defensive team and Dan putting his stamp on and all those kinds of narratives that I never believed in and tried to tell you that they weren't really true at all. Well, obviously, it's 2016 all over again. Because as you look at the way the Falcons are constructing this roster, it's about getting back to what they do best and where the core of their team is best and what it is that they do well, and that is their offensive unit. And we've tried to say for the longest time that despite what everybody will have you believe from a standpoint of, well, they drafted this first-round defensive end or this or that or whatever like that, when you have Matt Ryan and Julio Jones, you are always an offensive-minded football team first and foremost. That's just reality. I mean, you have a defense that tries to stop people, but they were never going to be the Baltimore Ravens. And part of that is because, obviously, the money is all tied up in the offensive side of the football. Well, let's flash forward now to what the Falcons have been doing all offseason long. Look at what it's been. It's been trying to recapture some of the blueprint of 2016. Load up with offensive personnel. Let's go get Todd Gurley. Let's go get an offensive lineman. Let's make a trade for Hayden Hurst. Let's get Laquon Treadwell, you know, as a third wide receiver on this team. Load up with as much personnel as what they can get and get back to what they do best, and that is offensive-minded football. Now, on the flip side of that, it's not about ignoring defense. It's about trying to fix the biggest ail that they've had or illness that they've had, I guess, biggest illness that they've had since that Super Bowl year, and that is sacking the quarterback. The glaring weakness, you know, massive gaping black hole size of sacking the quarterback. And that formula worked in 2016. Score a bunch of points, get some effective short yardage runs when you needed to, sack the other team's quarterback. To the point where you had a Vic Beasley with 15 and a half sacks that year that led the league, and obviously a season where he had multiple seasons together that didn't add up to that many out there. Now, I don't know if Dante Fowler is ready to be the next Vic Beasley from the standpoint of, hopefully not the downside curve, but more from the standpoint of, is he ready to have that monster kind of sack season? Is he ready to have that type of, you know, 15? Because listen, 15 and a half sacks is 15 and a half sacks. 11 and a half is a really nice number. That's a really good number, and you like that. 15 and a half, that's a pretty stout figure to get to. But that looks like what the formula for this team is going to be again. And we certainly know that Thomas and we certainly know that Dan are under immense pressure to try to get things back on track. And I don't mean just let's take the next step forward. No, it's get in the playoffs and go do something. Now, of course, you know my philosophy. I'm all about Super Bowl or bust. And when you have this much personnel, that should be the way that it is. But this formula should be an idea of, okay, we've got tons of personnel on offense. We've loaded up with every first-round draft pick that's imaginable from the last few years, last handful of years. So you load up with as much talent as you can. And some of it we know is, you know, high reward, high risk. We get that. You know, I don't know that Hayden Hurst is a high-risk type of guy, but I don't know that we've seen his best football. I know we haven't seen the best Laquon Treadwell. And hopefully we still got something left in the tank for Todd Gurley. If nothing else, at least Todd Gurley, maybe you feel like from what Devontae Freeman was back in 16, that dependable guy in some short yardage situations and effectively run the football and be good in the short yardage, you know, run game and red zone game. Now, we're going to talk about Todd Gurley in the next segment about expectations, you know, of him. But certainly the offensive personnel, they've tried to load up with a lot of offensive personnel. Now, I do believe, and I know a lot of people are going to point to offensive line and what can they do and things like that, but as we keep saying, there's only one spot to try to figure out. And with Gonneau and with Carpenter and with Brown, more and more it becomes apparent that, listen, you've paid a lot of money to two of those guys. Somebody should be able to figure that position out. And I'll say again, this team got to the Super Bowl with Chris Chester playing left guard. This team had Andy Levitre and Chris Chester at the guard position and got to the Super Bowl with it. So there's no reason why they can't have a good offensive line and a productive offensive line with Jamon Brown or James Carpenter. I mean, either one of those guys shouldn't be worse than what Chris Chester was. So I think you're going to find out that that's where they go in-house is to do that. But think about the offensive personnel with Matt, with Gurley, with Julio, with Ridley, with Treadwell, with Hurst. That's a lot of skill position people that creates a lot of matchups. And now this becomes about Dirk Koetter. You know, obviously the Falcons in that Super Bowl year with Kyle Shanahan doing a magnificent job of play calling and running that offense. Look, one of the things he was masterful at was getting the football spread around to different guys. I mean, Taylor Gabriel never had a better run in his NFL career than what he had coming here to the Falcons. And remember, Austin Hooper was a rookie on that team, and he wasn't the starter. That was Jacob Tammy that was the starter for the team, and actually had a very productive year until he got hurt, you know, later toward the season. So it's, again, a team that is loading up its offensive personnel. Why? Because that's what they do best. And I don't think it was a mistake to say that they wanted to try to get much better on defense because they have a defensive-minded coach, and they needed to get better on defense. And I think the thing that people forget when you start talking about 2016 is that it wasn't like the Falcons were a dominant defense. It wasn't like the Falcons were giving up 9 or 10 or 12 points. There were several weeks where this team was winning 35-27 or 27-24. I mean, you know, there weren't like pitching shutouts. This wasn't like the 76 Steelers, you know, with four shutouts to it. Or the 0-1 Raven. No one would ever confuse the Falcons defense in 2016 of that. But what could they do well? Well, one is they could sack the quarterback. They had a guy that could get after the quarterback, and people can argue about how we got a sacks and things like that. At the end of the season, 15 and a half sacks is 15 and a half sacks. If I told you any player would end his year with 15 and a half sacks for the Atlanta Falcons, no matter what name, number, jersey, whatever like that, you'd take that all day long, however it got there. So they could sack the quarterback, and they were opportunistic at getting turnovers. That's also something that hasn't been obviously as well on defense, especially a couple of years ago when they had the injuries. You know, we talked about the Desmond Trufant season where he had multiples of opportunities to change the outcome of games just simply by catching the football. So if they can be opportunistic, because if they can get a lead and force teams to have to throw, you create the potential for more turnovers, and obviously you create a potential for a lot more sacks. And we keep going back to that point about, okay, how do the Falcons, Jason and I were discussing this last week, how do the Falcons get to, you know, a particular number? If I say how the Falcons are going to get to 40 or 41 or 42 sacks, well, you know, you probably need a couple of more out of Fowler than just 11 and a half. You certainly need whatever it was, 3.5 or 4 out of Tack McKinley. And that's why it's still imperative that this team continue to add pass rush into the mix. Can't be satisfied. I know Chuck Smith's talked about it. We've talked about it ad nauseum. I would be all for adding more pass rush, whether you're telling me let's go interior offensive line with Derrick Brown or take an Isaiah Simmons or let's go sign a Clay Matthews. I mean, the more guys that you have that have the ability to sack the quarterback from all different angles, the better. Because in a perfect world with our offense, we should be back to getting toward that 30-point-per-game type of mark and forcing teams to have to play catch-up with us and forcing teams to have to get out of what they do comfortably and make them more one-dimensional to where our guys can tee off, to where a Dante Fowler can tee off, to where a Tack McKinley hopefully gets back to it. So I don't want to hear about, you know, we don't need to worry about hearing about I'm going to put my hands on guys and guys are going to love me or hate me or whatever all those mantras and bumper stickers and platitudes were going into last season. Just get a dynamic offense that creates a lot more opportunity. And a lot of times in the NFL, if you can just create more opportunity, then you've got a shot, to get some things done. Don't have to be, you know, this defense hopefully should have no reason why it needs to be Seattle or the 0-1 Ravens or anything like that. You know, even if this defense is give up some points like they were in 2016, the key, I think, and what they're showing you with Thomas and Dan is let's get back to playing the type of football where we can score a lot of points and we can get out in front of teams. And this is where Dirk Cutter has got to get some things done. And Cutter's had success, certainly in his first stint with the Atlanta Falcons, they were pretty good, but they were certainly a much more run-oriented team in his first stint there. And I think they'll feel a lot more comfortable about the run. That's what we're going to talk about next is, you know, I think they feel a lot more comfortable about where their run game is. You have a guy that's a true RB1 in Todd Gurley. And of course you have a cavalcade of guys that get a chance now to compete for a spot. Now there's real competition for that RB2 spot behind Todd Gurley. And hopefully that brings out the best in some of these guys. And maybe we see what a Kadri Allison or some of these guys can do. All right, when we get back, Todd Gurley, we just talked about him as part of this offense. If he just repeats the same type of season that he had last year, will that be a success? Will that be enough? We'll talk about that next. John Chuck, we're here. Live on 92.9 The Game and also on the radio.com app. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Back at it on the John Chuckery Show. Coming to you live here on a Monday night from parts unknown. Willie P is coming up at the top of the hour. 404-741-0929. That's the phone line. That is the Solomon Brothers Diamond Text Line to be a part of the show. Don't forget the radio.com app. Catch that, download it so you can catch us on the go anywhere that you may be. Follow me on social media at JMCH316, at JMCH316. So hopefully we're starting to work out some of the bugs on this broadcast and get things a little bit smoother tomorrow night. So we're figuring it out. It only took us 4 hours to get to that point, so we will get there. We're going to kind of change up this a little bit. We will get to a Love TKO here before the top of the hour, but we'll do it a little bit earlier so we give Willie P a chance to get all set up as he'll come up next at 11 o'clock. So we're talking about the Falcons offense and getting back to that offensive first type of mindset that they have for this team. And obviously a lot of surprise in the football world when the Falcons went ahead and signed to a 1-year, $6 million deal, Todd Gurley, bringing him back from his days, obviously, here at the University of Georgia. And Todd Gurley, you know, last year, obviously, we know now about the, you know, arthritic problems in his knee that was confirmed by his trainer as the season wound down last year. Did play 15 games. Now, he had his lowest total number of rushing yards of his career, had his lowest yards per carry number, and most importantly, had his lowest number of attempts per game, where he was just slightly under 15 at 14.9 attempts per game out there. So if Todd Gurley repeated another 3.8 yards a carry, 855 yards with 12 touchdowns, 31 receptions, would that be enough? Would that be considered a success if Todd Gurley did nothing else but repeat the numbers that he had from last year? Now, he averaged just slightly under 52 yards a game. It was like 51.7 yards per game last year for Gurley. I'd like to see that number get more like 60, 65. And if he did that even in a 15-game season, 14, 15 games, he could certainly be 900, you know, plus yards. The number that I would take all day long, though, even if it meant only 3.8 yards a carry, even if it meant a reduced number of carries, even if it meant a reduced number of yards, is that 12 rushing touchdowns. You know, once again, if we go back in time to when Devontae Freeman was at his best, you know, that was when Devontae had the back-to-back seasons of double-digit rushing touchdowns, back-to-back seasons of 10 rushing touchdowns. And in fact, one year he led the league with his 10 rushing touchdowns. And Gurley's done that a couple of times in his times with the Rams. So I would take the smaller amount of yards, because I do think that the Falcons have other options, that if Gurley could get somewhere about 60 yards, they should be able to find, you know, 30 to 40 yards. If they can get to that 100 yard per game mark, they could probably find 30 to 40 yards between Ito Smith or Kadri Allison or Brian Hill, depending on, you know, what guys end up in the mix and in the fold for all of this. So, you know, I'm okay with the yards, but give me that 12 touchdowns. Because if you talk about this Falcons offense trying to get back to elite level, 30 plus, you know, points per game, and, you know, and be that, you know, top 10 all-time type of offense, having a guy who can punch it in close in the red zone, something we haven't seen for a while, having a guy that's got a nose for the end zone like that would be a huge, huge uptick. And I think when you look at the Falcons' red zone offense, you take what Gurley can do, and I think what Laquon Treadwell could give you as a red zone guy. Listen, give me a guy that's big, fast, physical, you know, a guy maybe you could use in that same jet sweep type of role that Taylor Gabriel did with this team. A guy that if you get down deep in the red zone, you want to throw that bubble screen to Laquon Treadwell and let him use his size and strength to power his way into the end zone. I think that the Falcons have some good options. So, you know, I'm not looking for Todd Gurley to get 1,000 yards. I don't think Todd Gurley has to be a 1,000-yard running back. Would you take it? Of course. If he's a 1,000-yard running back, boy, imagine how good the Falcons' offense will really start to look at that point. By the way, as we're watching Charlotte Flair, how about Charlotte Flair and Charlie Caruso standing side by side with one another? My goodness gracious. Like, that will bring a tear to your eye, like those two statuesque, gorgeous women standing. But anyway, sorry, I'm distracted as I'm watching Raw from parts unknown. Anyway, but you know, the attempts per game at 15, I'm okay with that. I think that's a hopeful number if it stays somewhere around that number. You'd love to get 15 games played out of Todd Gurley. You know, even if he misses a game or two, if you told me he got 14 games for this team, yeah, I'd take that all day long out of Todd Gurley. Because I think at this point, if you could get 14, 15 games out of him and he got 850 yards, but could replicate that, you know, 10 to 12 rushing touchdowns, I think that number alone would be a monster number. And I think the underrated number to watch for in Todd Gurley, by the way, only 31 receptions for a couple of hundred yards. And I say that because if you look at his numbers in the passing game before that, you know, he had a season where he was 788 yards receiving, 12 yards a reception. You know, if you told me Todd Gurley could find 40, 42 receptions out of the backfield for 400 yards, or get, you know, somewhere into that 10 yards per reception, and he picked up a couple of receiving touchdowns last year as well, yeah, I'd take that. I mean, I think that's one of the things that maybe even if the rushing numbers aren't there for Todd Gurley, that he could be an asset in the passing game. And he could be one of those guys that Matt Ryan looks to as well. Think about how many weapons and think about how many guys are going to be able to stretch the field for the Atlanta Falcons. Their three wide receivers alone are all get down the field types of guys. So if you are pushing defensive backs, you know, further and further back down the field, and now you're asking linebackers, you know, and obviously Hayden Hurst coming out as well, but now you're asking those linebackers to try to take on the speed and the size of Todd Gurley. That's where I think, and Matt's always proven that he is excellent at trying to find a guy out of the backfield. I mean, that was one of the calling cards of Devontae Freeman was. Freeman may not have been that 1,400-yard running back, but he did have a season where he caught over 70 passes for this team. And that's an incredible number to think about when you get something like that. So I'm fascinated to see what Todd Gurley can do in the passing game. I'm fascinated to see what kind of can he get back to what he was a couple of years ago. Maybe not even running the football as much. You know, maybe those rushing attempts stay somewhat low, but he finds a way to catch four or five balls a game. You know, I'd love it if he averaged three receptions a game, that put him at 48. He catches 48 balls out of the backfield. He could have a pretty big, pretty monster season. But it's like we said, you know, it's all high risk, high reward as to what the Falcons are going to get out of all of this. So hopefully between Gurley and the options that they have back behind him, that they have enough depth at their running back position and somebody emerges. You'd like to see somebody emerge at that number two running back position for the Atlanta Falcons. If we know Gurley to be that RB1, who shakes out at that legitimate RB2? Is it Allison getting a chance maybe to go through a full camp with a chance to make that kind of move? Do they believe in Brian Hill? Is he a guy that they think is still on the upside? I'm not as big on the upside of Brian Hill. My personal hope would be that Kadri Allison would be that guy because he could be another guy that could be a red zone threat. We saw him score some touchdowns, some vulture touchdowns at the goal line for this team last year. I think he's got that size and strength to get between the tackles and make those kinds of plays as well for this team. So that's the guy I'm very interested to see if he can take that next step forward. Had a big, big career at Pitt, and I liked that draft pick when they made it, but he was a guy that just couldn't get on the field in the first half. Get on the field. He couldn't get dressed in the first half of the season for whatever reason. All right, Jarvis, we about ready to get this thing cranked up? Oh, yeah. You know how we do it as we end the show. Gonna be knocking off a little bit early tonight because we got Willie P coming up next. We want to give him a chance to get adjusted and get everything figured out there. So Willie P, he'll be coming up at the top of the hour, but we want to make sure that before we do anything else or before we get out of here, we let you hear the greatest opening lyric in all of music history.
Looking back over my years, I guess I shed some tears.
All right, so first night in on the new style of broadcast. We appreciate you hanging with us. Now that we got some of the bugs worked out, we should be getting better and better with all of this, so hopefully things will go a little bit smoother tomorrow night. We've got the microphones figured out. We've got the feedback figured out, so I think we got several things going on out there. So, you know, we appreciate you being with us and hanging this way. You know, it's certainly changes for all of us, and we're all having to kind of learn on the go and learn on the fly. You know, listen, I would love to be in the Kia Studios and do this. You know, just there's something about being in studio to do a radio show like this. So we will be back with you tomorrow night, so we'll be here all week doing our thing. So as we said, Willie P will be coming up at the top of the hour. Give us a follow on social media. I'm at JMCH316. He's at JarvisD90. We'll take a break, and then Willie P coming up. We'll catch you tomorrow night. We'll see you. Bye.
Trying to hold on, think it's gone. It's just another sad song. I think I better let it go.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.